All right, City Council, come back to order. It is that time of year when we pass the presidency of the council, and it currently is the very esteemed President Commissioner Nick Fish.
Mayor Adams, if I could, I have a few remarks in my farewell.
Look at the
speech.
Time. Where's that like button? Where's the button I can push?
Thank you for the honor that I.
Where's the? You're out of order. So I nominate Dan Saltzman to serve as president of the Portland City Council.
Second.
So moved and seconded. Any discussion? Carla, can you please call the vote on the motion?
Saltzman.
Accept with honor.
Aye.
Fritz.
Aye.
Fish.
Dan, I want you to know you were my first choice.
Oh.
Aye.
Adams.
Aye. Congratulations, Mr. President. You can now give him the free parking pass.
We wish.
I'm joking. All right, that gets us to the congratulations. That gets us to the regular agenda. Carla, can you please read item 8.14?
Mm-hmm. Authorized memorandum of understanding with 211 Info and Multnomah County to define working relationship in preparing for and responding to emergencies.
Commissioner Amanda Fritz.
I asked for this item to be pulled a couple of weeks ago so that we could celebrate and explain to citizens what this is. So I'd like to invite Director Carmen Merlo to come forward.
Thank you, Mayor. Thank you, Commissioner Fritz. Carmen Merlo, the Director of the Portland Bureau of Emergency Management. I'm really honored to have with me today Liesl Wendt. She's the executive director of 211 Info. 211 is one of our really most valued partners, and this memorandum of understanding helps to formalize the relationship that we have with them and also to call them out as the recognizable and central location that the public can call for emergency information. They serve this role on behalf of not just the city of Portland, but really for the entire state. And I'd like to just give Liesl a few words or a few minutes to say a few words.
Thanks, Carmen. Good morning. My name is Liesl Wendt. I'm the director of 211 Info. And I think what's really exciting about this MOU is in many ways it formalizes the existing arrangement we already have with PBM and Multnomah County, particularly in the winter, to formalize a role that we play with the Housing Bureau to keep track of shelter beds, warming center availability, and really serve as the public inquiry as people are worried about either being outside or needing to find a place to be inside. And in this sense, the MOU really places some groundwork for playing that role on other issues within the city and the county and formalizing a relationship with the other existing call centers in the area, like City County Information Referral at ONI, certainly with Multnomah County Aging and Disability Services, and some of the other partners. So we really look forward to working with PBM to create a more substantive plan of how we formalize those relationships with our other partners. As Carmen said, we certainly play this role increasingly around the state. Recently, the governor activated 211 in the coastal communities, and we're playing a role of helping people decide what to do with tsunami debris if they find it, kind of calming public fears about what do I do and what's happening on the coast. So it's been a good experience for us to take what we've done in the city of Portland and really take that experience to other parts of the state as we expand our role statewide. We certainly have other experience with our national network. In the fall, we actually played a backup role to our partners in Vermont who were overwhelmed with flooding, and ourselves and the LA 211 ended up taking their overflow calls and tracked property damage and then gave that information to FEMA. So we're part of a network that really allows us to be nimble and dynamic. We can just play that role for others around the country, and then we can also benefit from that if a crisis should happen in the city and county that goes beyond our scope. So I thank you for your leadership in putting this together. I certainly thank Carmen and Dave Houghton at Multnomah County for working with us over the last year to formalize this role and agreement.
I just want to close by saying that 211 not only helps us get emergency information out to the public, they also kind of serve as our eyes and ears on the street. They help us identify certain trends and that we can help update our emergency information, frequently asked questions. And so it's really a very symbiotic relationship, and we're really pleased to have this before you for adoption.
All right, questions from council? All right. Does anyone wish to testify on this matter? All right, can you please call the vote?
Saltzman.
Well, this is great. I'm really pleased to support this. I had a chance to do a sit-along recently out at 211, so I have a better idea and understanding of the valuable services it provides. And so I'm really happy to see a further good working relationship with our Bureau of Emergency Management. Just like you said, Carmen, sort of the ability to sort of use 211 to help us sort of see emerging trends or concerns is a great example of why we need this memorandum. So please to support it. Aye.
Leonard?
Thank you. Aye.
Fritz?
Well, thank you to Director Merlot for setting this up and Lisa for being here this morning for the services that you both provide. So it's important for folks to know that 211 is a operating number that you can call to get services right now. And it's not only for emergencies, although this memorandum of understanding will further deepen that. Don't call 911 for when you can call 211. I'm working on setting up a 311 system within the city, working with Bureau of Emergency Communications and the Office of Neighborhood Involvement, but that's not live just yet. So especially for social services, 211 is a great number to call. If you're needing information during business hours, please call 823-4000, 503-823-4000 is our all-purpose City, County, Portland Development Commission information and referral system that's run out of the Office of Neighborhood Involvement. That's a great number. I used to remember all the other, you know, 823-SAFE, 823-BUMP, and all the other worthy numbers, which if they're numbers that you call a lot, you probably know, but if you don't automatically remember those, 823-4000 or 211 are great options. The other issue that the mayor and I are working on is for folks who are having mental health crisis in our community. And again, as I mentioned a couple of weeks ago, we encourage people to call 800-SUICIDE or the Alliance for Life Oregon Partnership numbers. There are a lot of resources available in our community, and we need to publicize them so that people aren't calling 911 when there's really better resources elsewhere. And similarly, people don't necessarily know that the city's non-emergency line, 823-3333, also is answered by our 911 operators. So it's part of our whole community care system that 211 is a great resource that people can call 24/7, right, Liesl? No?
Monday through Friday, 8 to 6.
Monday through Friday, 8 to 6. So again, that's a good resource. And that's another of the reasons that we're developing the 311 system to cover those other pieces. So it's important that you are here today, and I also had to take this opportunity to educate the folks watching on cable of all of the other resources that are available, because we care about people in this community, and that's what the Office of Emergency Management does, it's what 211 does, and it's what each of our city bureaus do. So I appreciate you being here. Aye.
Fish?
Well, I want to thank both of our presenters today. Carmen, thank you for the work you're doing to bring, to help some of our nonprofit partners in the housing world develop even better plans to deal with an emergency and bring the expertise that you and your bureau have on that subject. I appreciate that. And Liesl, thank you for a great partnership with the city. And I'm pleased that in the final adopted budget, we continued to fund 211. And that was another reason why I think it was terribly important to fully fund the safety net in this budget cycle. The good news is 211 does great work. The bad news is we're having to turn too many people away who are calling and saying they have a hungry child or they're unsheltered or what have you. So in addition to supporting your good work, I think we ought to send a shout out to the public to say there's a really desperate situation out there. And if this is a time to write a check to your local food bank or to donate food or clothing or other things, because your operators do a wonderful job, but we don't have the resources to meet the need right now. And then just a little plug for Liesl, an award-winning documentary team has spent the last year filming her operation and then actually tracking some of the families that they serve. And they've done a rough cut of a film called American Winter, which is going to tell the story of 211 and how it is making a difference in people's lives. So congratulations on that.
Thank you.
Aye.
Adams.
Good job. Thank you for your partnership on this. Aye. So approved. Can you please read the title for item number 814?
Aye.
815.
Provide for civil forfeiture of property that is instrumentally or proceeds of money laundering.
Hello.
Good morning, Mayor.
Good morning. Welcome back.
Good morning. Thank you. My name is Assistant Chief Eric Hendricks. Good morning, Mayor Adams and Commissioners.
Thanks for the opportunity to address council today on this proposed ordinance. In 2010, the legislature enacted a new state civil forfeiture law, ORS Chapter 131A, that created procedures and rules to seize and forfeit property that represents profits and or proceeds of crimes. The state law pertains only to drug crimes, but contains a provision that allows local governments to expand forfeiture to additional crimes. In June of last year, the council passed an ordinance that added prostitution-related offenses to crimes where the city could seek to seize profits and their proceeds. Commissioner Salzman was the initiator of this ordinance. And we know from Commissioner Salzman that his intent of the ordinance was to seize profits from prostitution-related crimes and apply some of those funds to services for the victims of prostitution. Last year, at our request through the legislature, the state forfeiture law to allow local governments to use forfeited funds to help pay for drug treatment costs passed. This change in state law allows the Police Bureau for the first time to use seized funds from the state asset forfeiture account to assist in this year's budget for the Downtown Service Coordination Team drug treatment programs. Unfortunately, the funds we seize every year will not provide for the entire cost of the Service Coordination Team treatment programs. The Bureau believes that adding a money laundering ordinance to the state asset forfeiture law will help provide additional help to help defray the costs of the Service Coordination Team drug treatment programs. We thank the Council for your support for the Service Coordination Team and look forward to the continuation of this important program that's helped reduce crime in our downtown neighborhoods. Thank you.
Questions from the City Council?
Go ahead. I am just curious to know, with respect to the forfeiture of assets related to prostitution, how much resources have found its way to supporting some of our programs for women.
Mary Adams, Commissioner, and I anticipated this question as I was walking over to council today, and unfortunately I don't have the answer. I can get it to you. I would guess it would be relatively small. Unfortunately, we make those arrests. The cash that are on the suspects is usually in the hundreds to perhaps a few thousand dollars, but I can get you those figures.
And do we expect forfeitures related to money laundering to be a much larger source of forfeiture dollars?
Yes. Money laundering crimes usually come from white-collar crime cases, real estate fraud, and crimes related to the distribution of controlled substances. One example, in March of this year, officers from the Drug and Vice Division spoke to a gentleman getting off an Amtrak train at Union Station. And following a consent search, we found nearly $200,000 in his luggage that was related to the distribution of controlled substances. The evidence was not strong enough to arrest that person for the distribution of controlled substances, but we did make an arrest for money laundering. Many times those cases are adopted to the federal government through the DEA or the FBI or the IRS, but in some cases they're not. And when they're not adopted by a federal agency, the adding of this ordinance would allow the Police Bureau to seize those funds. And if the appeals process is the city is successful in the appeals process, those funds would go into the state asset forfeiture account, and we could apply those funds next year to the cost of the Service Coordination Team.
So I guess I'd like to know, as we move forward, if money laundering forfeiture assets are, you know, sufficient for Service Coordination Team, I guess that would beg the question to me, well, can some of those monies then go towards prostitution victim services? So I think that's something I'd like to follow, and maybe you can update us. And
I can get you that information.
Months.
It's certainly worthy of a discussion.
Yeah, okay. Thanks.
Senator Fritz?
Following on from that, thank you. I would like to see that as a line item in next year's budget, the proceeds from all of the ordinances that we gather money from, because the ordinance before us doesn't talk about directing it particularly to the Service Coordination Team nor the prostitution services that we do. It just said law enforcement purposes. Since that's clearly the legislative intent, mm-hmm. I would like to know, when doing next year's budget, how much is specifically dedicated, we have available to then the council making the choices of which law enforcement purposes to use this particular part of money.
We can do that.
Thank you.
Any other discussion from council? Anyone wish to testify on this matter? Carla, can you please call the vote?
This is a non-emergency.
Oh, sorry. Moves to a second reading and further council consideration next week. All right. Can you please read the title for emergency ordinance, item number 816?
Amend a contract with LifeWorks Northwest in an amount not to exceed $240,000 and extend the term through June 30, 2013 to work with the Police Bureau Prostitution Coordination Team.
Hi, welcome back.
Good morning, Mayor, Commissioners. My name is Mark Krueger, Captain, East Precinct. This ordinance, as read, will amend the contract to provide an additional $100,000 of city funding to continue our relationship with LifeWorks Northwest in our prostitution coordination team. The Portland Police Bureau and our prostitution coordination team can be very effective at arresting and interdicting prostitution crimes. However, without the assistance of LifeWorks to provide the social services that the prostitution victims require in order to work themselves out of the lifestyle, we are not effective in addressing the overall problem. And LifeWorks has provided us with substantial support in addressing our prostitution issue in the city of Portland. During the course of our relationship with LifeWorks Northwest between November of 08 and March of this year, they have seen and treated 173 women and assisted them in moving out of prostitution. And we request that this be supported to continue that good work and help reduce the prostitution problem in the city.
Questions from the council?
What was the time period you said that
we began in November of 2008, and presently through March of this year, it's 173 individual women have been treated.
Amazing work.
Yeah.
All right. Does anyone wish to testify on emergency ordinance item number 816? All right. Carla, would you please call the vote?
Yeah, somebody.
Oh, did I say? Yeah. Mary? You can go ahead and stay.
Thank you so much for this work. This is very impressive to me. One thing I thought I would bring up as an alternative way to look at issues of sex work are in Sweden, they have actually criminalized the purchasing of sex work, and what they have found is a dramatic reduction in sex sales on the streets. And it's very novel in terms of analyzing how Netherlands deals with it and how Sweden deals with it. One of the pitfalls of Sweden's approach is that it's said to push sex sales off into the periphery, where people leave the municipality, go outside, and they often engage in riskier behaviors with more demanding clients who often have a propensity for violence. But I think the more that we can do to encourage an international comparative law approach towards looking at ways to really assess this, I think this falls in line directly with the problems of DNA evidence for rape crimes and what we're doing to analyze that, because often the sex workers are victimized by theft and rape and domestic violence as well. So I thank you so much for your work, and I'd love for you to look at Sweden's approaches towards reducing that, because any kind of impairment in that regard is an impairment on women's ability to proceed and participate in government and education and their human rights. Thank you.
All right, Carla, would you please call the vote?
Saltzman?
Well, I'm very pleased to support this ordinance. LifeWorks has been, as was noted, a critical partner in the Portland Police Bureau's prostitution coordination team. If not for LifeWorks, adult trafficking victims would not be getting the services or the connections that LifeWorks can provide, such as housing and service partnerships with JOIN. LifeWorks has also been a strong piece of the anti-trafficking continuum that spans from serving children to young adults and onward. So I appreciate Chief Reese and the mayor for making this happen, and pleased to vote aye.
Leonard.
I think it's probably important to remember that there was quite a showdown, if you will, in 2008 over this approach versus prostitution-free zones. And I and others felt strongly that prostitution-free zones simply moved prostitution from the area that was being targeted to another area. It didn't resolve prostitution. So I appreciate greatly the embrace of the council to this approach, which gets to the core root of the problem and helps treat women who are the victims in prostitution so they can find another way to lead their life. And I appreciate the work you, Captain Krueger, and our police bureau have done on this. Aye.
Fritz?
I also appreciate the partnership. This $240,000 is funded with a $140,000 grant from the U.S. Department of Justice and $100,000, which the council appropriated as a special appropriation during from the general fund in this fiscal year. And I thank all of the women who wrote in during the budget process telling us their personal stories of how LifeWorks has helped them to in their recovery process. That made a huge difference, and I think is one of the reasons that we're able to pass this ordinance today. Clearly, we have more to do, and I appreciate Mary Ang's discussion. We did make some changes in the legislature in last year. More need to be made, and there's more that we can do to make it clear that this is a crime. This is not something that we should be taking lightly, and it's certainly something that the city can Council is committed to solving the issue of sex trafficking, human trafficking in our community. Pleased to vote aye.
Fish.
Aye.
Adams.
Well, I want to acknowledge the work over years that have led up to the renewal of this contract as both Commissioner Saltzman on his work on human trafficking issues. Has been years in the making, and also Commissioner Randy Leonard. He mentioned a little bit about his work to add more services and to the victims of human trafficking and to change, working with Commissioner Saltzman to sort of change the city's approach. That has yielded real results, not only for the neighborhood in which this problem has plagued the city, but also for the victims and the families that are impacted by it. So really, I want to take this opportunity to thank you both for your great work on this. And finally, the Police Bureau that we've got, I think, one of the most dedicated, passionate group of folks working on ending the crime of human sex trafficking I've ever seen. It's really very inspiring. So thanks for your work. Aye. So approved. Can you please read the title for item number 817, emergency ordinance.
Amend the District Property Management License Code to rename the Downtown Business District to the Clean and Safe District, update the CPI calculation, clarify the Lloyd Business District payment due dates, and make other housekeeping changes.
Hi, welcome.
Good morning, Mayor and City Council. I'm Thomas Lanham.
Director Lanham, welcome back.
Thank you. I'm the Revenue Bureau Director. Carla, there are some documents that we had provided earlier. There are two reports coming up to you shortly. One of them is the capture of the feedback that we received about the Downtown Business District. It's the thinner of the two. The covers look very similar. The second report is a thicker report having to do with the final recommendations that we're bringing forward today. joining me today are Lene Berg of Clean and Safe and also Terry Williams, my License and Tax Division Manager. In April of 2011, City Council passed Resolution 36857 directing the Revenue Bureau and Clean and Safe to evaluate the costs and benefits of district expansion and to review the formula used to calculate the fee assessed on condominiums in the district. We've completed that work. The Bureau invited almost 10,000 district stakeholders to participate in a broad public process to review district expansion and the condominium fee formula. Approximately 500 people chose to participate. The Bureau held focus groups, solicited written feedback, and conducted targeted polls for people that were living within the district. The results of the feedback we received are captured in the report before you. It's the thinner of the two. On pages 6 and 7, you can see some of the poll results that we received regarding the district. And I would draw your attention specifically to figure 8 on page 7, which gets into, talks about the fee formula and whether people would support a simplified fee formula based on a rate per square foot versus the current fee formula. So you can see there for figure 8 that people were very, very split on that issue. The focus groups also made it very clear that views were not only pervasive against joining the district, but that they were also very deeply held. We also heard from stakeholders that they wanted a simplified fee formula, The council's direction last year was to maintain the current contribution level paid by existing condominium owners so that any changes to the fee formula will essentially be a reallocation of the fees paid between the various condominiums. So given that limitation, there was no clear consensus as to how to simplify the fee, again, as you can see from some of the results in the report. So for these reasons, we're recommending that the district not be expanded at this time, and we're recommending that the condominium fee calculation remain as it is. So the ordinance before you today really concerns a number of housekeeping changes that Terry Williams can walk you through, the two principal ones being the changing of the district from the downtown business district to an expanded, enhanced services district called the Clean and Safe District. And recall, we have two such enhanced service districts. We have the Lloyd District, and we have the downtown, the current name of it is the Downtown Business Improvement District. So Terry will walk you through some of those changes.
Good morning. Thank you. I'm Terry Williams. There are, a number of housekeeping changes. One of the most important and the reason for the emergency ordinance is the changes that are being made to the CPI calculation. That's the Consumer Price Index calculation. The way it's written now, number one, those numbers are no longer published by the Bureau of Labor and Statistics. So that's the first problem. Two, City Council in a previous ordinance approved 3 years of zero CPI increases, and so we have to set that calculation at where it is to incorporate those 3 years of zero increases, and then restart it again to get back on track with the CPI calculation. So those are some of the main, and we have to do that now in an emergency because we have to still send out bills on August 1st, which is only a few weeks away. So we need the new CPI calculation language in code in order to do that. The other change to the CPI calculation is providing the Clean and Safe Board with an opportunity to request that council set a CPI calculation different than what it would normally set out. So that's a new process. And so those are the, in my opinion, some of the critical changes that are going into this housekeeping, and probably more than housekeeping in those areas. Additionally, some of the other changes include correcting some Bureau name changes that hasn't been corrected in 10 to 15 years, and so Bureau names change. Again, as Thomas mentioned, changing the name of the downtown district to the Clean and Safe District. That's something that they're trying to identify and market that out, and so we want to have that reflected in their portion of the code. Additionally, we need to change a lot of our administrative processes because we're not doing things exactly as code says, so we want to get those in alignment. We want to fix some word usage and other grammar errors. And then we need to clarify the due dates for the Lloyd Business District because they came in after and kind of picked some different times to make those billings out. They don't match with the downtown, but we want their section of the code to reflect what is actually the billing dates and the due dates for them. So that's kind of the summarization of the code changes before you.
Questions from council? All right, Ms. Berg.
Morning, Mayor Adams and members of council.
Can you push your button on? There you go.
Good. Good morning, Mayor Adams and members of council. I'm Lene Berg, Executive Director of Clean and Safe, and I'm appearing on behalf of Clean and Safe and the Portland Business Alliance. I want to thank and compliment Director Lanham and the Bureau of Revenue staff for their thorough and professional work bringing this ordinance before council. In February of 2009, council adopted changes to the Clean and Safe Code to ensure that all recipients of Clean and Safe services contributed equitably to providing those services. In response to the community input, the council at the time asked that the Clean and Safe Board of Directors and the Board of Revenue examine two questions: potential expansion of the district and potential changes to the Clean and Safe fee formula as it relates to condominiums. The Clean and Safe Board has worked with the Bureau to examine both of these questions in detail over the past year. We have provided the Bureau and stakeholders with cost estimates for providing services in the potential expansion areas, attended meetings with stakeholders, answered questions, and facilitated meetings and discussions among condominium owners. The Bureau of Revenue has conducted extensive outreach to both the potential expansion area and to condo owners within the district to gauge opinion on the questions of expansion and potential changes to the fee formula. We believe the process that the Bureau undertook was very inclusive, open, and credible. The Clean and Safe Board does not think there is sufficient support in the potential expansion area to justify moving the district boundary. We also do not believe that there is sufficient consensus among condo owners within the district to make changes to the fee formula. We support the proposed changes to the ordinance to clean up archaic language and to officially change the name of the district to Clean and Safe. Thank you for your time and consideration of this ordinance. On behalf of the Clean and Safe Board of Directors, I would like to again thank Director Lanham and his staff for all their hard work.
Thank you. Any questions, Council? Okay. Do we have anybody signed up to testify?
We have two people who signed up. Please come on up. They are Sam Sadler and Ira Gottlieb.
Welcome. And if you can just give us your names, and then you'll each have 3 minutes. There's a timer right in front of you on the dais.
My name is Sam Sadler. I live in a condo in the Portland Plaza, which is in the current district. I'm speaking on behalf of myself, not the condo association. In funding the Downtown Business Improvement District, the city extracts fees from downtown property condo owners to support private businesses through the Portland Business Alliance and Clean and Safe program. The documents before you do not discuss the fairness of the current formula or the alternate formula. They simply recount the elements. They say there's no consensus, but it's not a matter of consensus, it's a matter of equity and a matter of policy. The final recommendation without justification endorses the continuing current unfair funding formula. One problem is that the Council's directive that the formula remain revenue neutral enshrines the direct subsidy to downtown businesses by condo owners. If the fee were based on services received by the condos, the total collected from the condos would not meet that directive. Why should any condo owner help pay $95,000 for the downtown retail marketing program, including Fashion Week, pay $195,000 for sidewalk ambassadors, we can find our own way around downtown, pay $182,000 for a substantial portion of the salaries of two lobbyists of the Portland Business Alliance, and $138,000 for its other staff, plus $50,000 to subsidize the Portland Business Alliance? The current formula is arbitrary as it applies to condos. Look at the elevator element of the fee. It is based on the assumption that it captures the number of staff and customers entering a building as a surrogate for how many people use the property in a day. But there's no comparison between the limited number of residents in the Portland Plaza and the number of customers shopping at downtown retail stores. There is a large discrepancy between what the Portland Plaza condo owners pay and what the business owners who receive the benefits pay. I note that in 2011, the condo owners of the Portland Plaza had property taxes of about $655,000. That was twice Nordstrom's property taxes. As for the bid assessment, the Portland Plaza paid almost $37,000, while Nordstrom's paid $19,000 and Macy's paid a little over $20,000. That is simply unfair for a downtown marketing program. If the city requires condo owners to continue to subsidize businesses, the rate for condo owners should simply be based on the square footage of property. It's an arbitrary metric, but it is less arbitrary than the convoluted, unfair metric that the city now uses. It would create the least disparity among those who have to pay. Since the city claims this is not a tax, ability to pay is not relevant. Finally, the city created this fee to fund the Downtown Business Improvement District. The emphasis is business. Proposing to change the name to Clean and Safe District merely hides the intent of the fee and discredits the legitimacy of the city's actions. The city is trying to hide the fact that we pay for business marketing, such as Fashion Week and the ambassadors, and the huge subsidy of the Portland Business Alliance lobbyists and other staff. Thank you.
Thank you. Sir?
Thank you. My name is Ira Gottlieb. I am a retired attorney and also own a condominium in the Portland Plaza, which is in the downtown business district. I'd like to just make 2 points for the council's consideration. First, times change, community needs change. We no longer can rely on precedent to determine if a fee is in reality, a tax. Recently, the U.S. Supreme Court ruled that a penalty fee is to be considered a tax, which therefore makes the Affordable Care Act constitutional. The downtown management fee, in my opinion, is also in effect a tax, notwithstanding the illogical, tortured reasoning implied by the Oregon Tax Court. In 2009, the Oregon Tax Court recognized that the management fee was not a tax, although it had to admit that previous case law did not involve issues presenting the effect, if any, of the condominium form of ownership when the question was raised whether the effect, if any, of the condominium form of ownership was a tax for purposes of measure number 5. That's Old Town Lofts Association versus the City of Portland. Thus, we have the strange result that commercial enterprises can take the fee as a business expense, reducing their taxes, but a fixed income condominium owner who must ultimately pay the fee is precluded from doing so. This is unjust, inequitable, and unfair. I note that the Property Management License Program Handbook says that since 1988, the fee has kept the city center vital and attractive to business, shoppers, and visitors. Not so for condominium homeowners, as this fee, the loss of Fairless Square, and various bond measures that are coming up this fall may force many middle-class downtown condo owners to leave the core area, which make living in downtown impossible. It is just another nail that's being hammered into the coffin, making Portland housing a place for only the very wealthy, the very poor, and the homeless. Fairness and equity can only be obtained if you recognize that homeowners should not be taxed to subsidize the business community. And if a fee must be imposed, it not be one that is convoluted, but one that is simple, that everyone can understand. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you both. Anyone else wish to testify? All right. Unless there's additional discussion from council, Carla, would you please call the vote?
Saltzman?
Aye.
Leonard?
Well, I do want to make a couple observations. The first is I'm very pleased to see Lene Berg working back for the city with all the great years of experience you've had at the Police Bureau. They're very lucky to have you. And I do think it's important to, just for a moment, to acknowledge some of the arguments that were made, though those that made them may not be pleased with my comments, but I hope you think about them. I've had an opportunity to look at downtown areas throughout the United States. Portland is pretty unique in that we have such a vibrant downtown. And to somehow segregate visitors and shoppers and businesses from those who live downtown, I think, is misleading. I've also got the opportunity recently to begin looking at various housing opportunities in the city because I plan to downsize where I'm living. And let me assure you, if you choose to sell your condominium because you don't like the fee, you're going to do rather well. There is no place in the city where the housing prices are higher than in the core area, and I know that from as recently as last night. And that's directly tied to the vibrancy of downtown, to the number of shoppers of downtown, and to the security provided by clean and safe downtown. The downtown core area that is Portland provides a level of services and opportunities for residents that are unparalleled in large cities throughout the United States. And it isn't just because clean and safe. I think it has to do with a lot of different efforts. Service coordination team certainly is a factor. the economic health of the city via the efforts of the Portland Development Commission, Mayor Adams, and others certainly as a factor. But I certainly wouldn't underestimate the impact Clean and Safe has caused, if not directly, at least indirectly, for those who choose to reside downtown. I consider downtown an option for myself in the future simply because of those facts. In our cities, I would not live in a core area downtown. But this downtown is, I'm pleased to say, with no advantage one way or another of agreeing or disagreeing with anything that's saying here, this downtown I would live in if I could afford to do so. And I think that is largely due to the housing prices downtown to the attractiveness of living in an area that provides the security, the magnet, if you will, for people from all over the region to come here to shop and recreate. So I appreciate the work of Clean and Safe. I appreciate the work of Thomas Lanham. I concede I was a little disappointed in this outcome. I learned almost 20 years ago in the legislature that people agreed taxes that need to be levied, but the fairest tax is the tax somebody else pays. And therein lies our problem here in Oregon on a number of levels, from education to what we're discussing here today. But I think that there are a lot of people that benefit from these services that don't pay their fair share, and I think there are more that ought to be included in the mix. But I was clearly not in the majority on that front. So thank you again for your work. Aye.
Fritz.
I also appreciate the work of Clean and Safe and of the Revenue Bureau. When this issue was raised last year, there was a huge amount of controversy, and it looked like we were going to have a city council hearing with both chambers packed and lots of folks on one side and lots of folks on the other side. And indeed, the numbers regarding the fee, 115 in favor of keeping it the same, changing it, 117 against changing it. Those are very even, and the study showed that it was entirely based on whether the voters would have paid more or less, as Commissioner Leonard alluded to. So it's probable that there could be a fairer or different assessment. There has been a really good public process on this, and I appreciate that above all, because this is an important service that's being provided not only to businesses and residents and from elsewhere, visitors, also for those downtown. The Downtown Neighborhood Association's calendar that they gave us this morning, that Felicia Williams gave us during citizen communications, and thanks to the Office of Neighborhood Involvement and Neighbors West Northwest for helping to produce this beautiful calendar, is evidence of what Commissioner Leonard just alluded to. It's obvious that our downtown is not only a great place to visit for those coming in from the suburbs or from the outer reaches of Portland, it's a wonderful place to live. And part of that is due to the work of Clean and Safe, the Portland Business Alliance, and indeed the residents of the condominiums and the residents of the apartments downtown. We share our downtown space, and we work really hard to make sure that everybody is heard, everybody has a place, everybody is honored. And we don't always succeed, but we keep trying. So I appreciate Mr. Sadler and Mr. Gottlieb coming in to express their ongoing concerns. This is something that does get renewed periodically, and that we're not done just because we're doing this particular decision. I appreciate the fact that it's been a good public process and that we've come to a fair degree of consensus, although not unanimity. Aye.
Fish.
I appreciate the eloquent remarks of my colleagues, and I just want to note that in addition to the things that Randy identified as contributors to a vibrant, healthy downtown, I'd be remiss if I didn't remind the public that we're also making substantial investments, public and private, in parks and in affordable housing. Director Park, Elizabeth Carruthers Park, the Fields, I mean, three magnificent parks that would be the envy of people living in other parts of our community who don't have the benefit of an urban renewal district. And we've also, this council has invested substantial funds in preserving affordable homes for people, precisely to address the concern of one of our testifiers that we downtown not become a place just of rich and poor. And that is at the heart of our preservation agenda, and that will be guiding in part some of our decisions in the newest urban renewal district. So I want to just add those as factors which we think also contribute to a livable downtown. Anyway, I appreciate the good work of the Revenue Bureau and the consultations they've done with us each of us individually, and I'm pleased to support this. Aye.
Adams.
To Thomas and his team, thank you all very much. We appreciate it. To the Portland Business Alliance, thanks for your work on this. I'm glad to get it done. Aye. So approved. Can you please read the title and call the vote for item number 818?
Authorize administrative rule process for special permitting of four hire transportation operators conducting return medical transportation trips from non-contiguous medical brokerage areas.
If I could, just by way of privilege, I'm meeting with some of the folks that testified on Friday, and if I'm convinced by their arguments, I will come back with refinements and additional amendments, but I want to get this on the books, and I want to get this reform as it's being described to us on the books, but I am willing to look at further changes after I talk to folks.
Saltzman.
Well, I also have met with several limousine owner-operators, and I think they make a case that they should not even be under the private for hire board's scope and jurisdiction. So I'm glad the mayor is going to be meeting with those folks as well, and that is something I am interested in looking at further, but these ordinances are not that issue at this time. So, aye.
Leonard?
Aye.
Fritz?
This is a good thing. It provides a permit exemption for medical trips coming from long-distance locations, and we do need an exemption for those types of needs. I also am interested in looking at the round-trip issue versus this one-way pickup drop-off. My staff and I looked into the legalities that were raised at the hearing. We'll be open to reconsideration. At this point, I support it. Aye.
Fish?
Aye.
Adams?
Aye. So approved. Can you please read the title and call the vote for 819?
Amend vehicle age requirements for vehicles regulated under private for hire transportation regulations. Saltzman?
Aye.
Leonard?
Aye.
Fritz?
I note that there is an exemption process which some of the company representatives I spoke with were not aware of, so that there is a provision for appeals when a vehicle is still in good condition that the requirement can be waived. Aye.
Fish?
Aye.
Adams?
Aye. So approved. Can you please read the title and call the vote? Second reading item number 820.
Amend civil penalties for companies and drivers that operate or drive in violation of private for hire transportation regulations, make operation of an unpermitted private for hire vehicle a criminal offense. Saltzman?
Aye.
Leonard?
Aye.
Fritz?
Aye.
Fish?
Aye.
Adams?
Aye. So approved. We're adjourned for the week. Oh, I'm sorry. We're unadjourned. We've got something pulled from consent.
Yes, I'm 796.
Can you read the title again?
Mm-hmm. Enact item number 11 of the public sidewalk management plan by creating a pilot program to test a way to better manage the concentration and placement of publication boxes located on public sidewalks.
Hi, welcome.
Good morning. My name is Rich Eisenhower with the Portland Bureau of Transportation. With me today is Bernie Bottomley with the Portland Business Alliance. The ordinance in front of you is to create a pilot program to look at a certain area to manage the placement and concentration of publication boxes. The main purpose of this agenda is one of the objections of the sidewalk management plan to look at this issue, and also it's an objective of the management of the bus and light rail mall and loop area. The proposed pilot is to install anywhere between about 3 to 5 publication boxes in the high pedestrian area in the mall loop surrounding Pioneer Courthouse Square. We are working with all the adjacent property owners within that area, as well as Pioneer Courthouse Square and Portland Parks and Recreation on the placement of the boxes. The money, PBOT has up to $20,600 to spend for this project. The money is coming from the 2009 ordinance on the enhanced mall and loop project that goes to spend on maintenance, cleaning, and security. We're working as a partnership with PBA. PBA will be working on the purchase, installation, manage, and the maintenance of these boxes. Bernie can speak more details about our partnership with the pilot program. It's a one-year pilot. We're looking at the end to look at how well are they used and the feedback from the publications, the cost to manage the boxes, as well as the success of managing usable sidewalks within this district.
Mr. Mayor, members of council, Bernie Bottomley with the Portland Business Alliance. So the objective here is to set up a one-year pilot project to see whether we can establish newspaper boxes or publication boxes, I've been told we're supposed to call them, where we can manage the proliferation of the standalone newspaper boxes in high traffic areas of downtown. We've met with the local editorial content newspapers multiple times to have conversations about the kinds of things that they would like to see in this program and sort of the basic requirements that they have for continuing to distribute their newspapers. We've sized the project so that all of the current standalone boxes on the corners around Pioneer Square will be accommodated in the new congregate box facility. So we won't have to make any decisions about who gets to stay and who has to leave. We've accommodated everybody in those locations, including the non-editorial content papers. So the more advertising-oriented publications will be accommodated as well. We've talked to all the property owners adjacent to where the boxes will be installed and have agreement from them and actually enthusiastic support for taking this approach to try to just manage the proliferation and sort of the visual impact of the boxes. And the Alliance has agreed to take on the maintenance of the boxes, so our normal clean and safe graffiti abatement crews and others will be responsible for making sure that the publication boxes stay in good repair and free of graffiti. So our hope is to have a really nice quality experience for folks who are using the publications. And then we'll also ensure that if there are empty spaces, they don't become receptacles for garbage or drug paraphernalia or some of the other problems that we have with the abandoned freestanding boxes in downtown. And then at the end of the year, we'll look back. We'll be keeping track monthly of how distribution of the papers is going, how the boxes are being maintained. And at the end of the year, we'll get together with the newspaper folks again and see whether it's worked for them. Have they maintained or increased circulation? And would they be interested in potentially expanding the program? There are a series of issues that would come up at that point about, you know, how to expand the program, how it would be paid for, and so forth. But initially, we're just testing to see whether this idea of congregate boxes works for everybody.
Here, I have a couple questions. I think.
Yeah, go ahead.
Bernie, is this similar to what you see in other cities like New York, where within BIDs there's uniform boxes?
Yes.
that are carefully placed?
Yeah, it is. And there are quite a few cities, larger cities, that have these kinds of boxes. There are different models for how they're managed. In a lot of cities, the major daily newspaper is the owner of the facility, and they lease it back to other publications. A lot of those are legacy arrangements from years gone by. We just didn't have that kind of dynamic here, so we agreed, obviously, with the generous partnership of the city to begin the process by purchasing.
Now, I noticed a lot of the boxes around town, either the paid or free papers, run a little insert on the front to advertise some, you know, what's in that edition. How do you accommodate that, or how would you address that under this model?
Well, we won't accommodate sort of on advertising on the exterior of the box. It'll be the window for the newspaper will be the newspaper's opportunity to advertise itself to the world. In addition to that, with some language I think the mayor will offer, we will have the newspaper's name printed on the side and the front of the box in the script type that is their masthead.
Lastly, I think I got one email on this. I believe it was from Willamette Week,
saying that they had no objection. I guess it raises the question, have any of the publications that would be part of this pilot objected to the one-year pilot?
No, not they haven't objected to us.
No, we haven't heard. Know your newspaper boxes.
I'll wait till you hear my questions.
No. Oh, okay.
Well, I'm just curious. I mean, I think this is great and long overdue, so I'm glad to see that everything's aligned to make this happen. But I guess why is this just a one-year pilot? Why don't we just do it for the Pioneer Square area and then decide whether it expands or not? I mean, it seems like it's long overdue. It'll be more appealing visually.
Yeah. I think, you know, baby steps. There's been concern about, from the publications, about how the process would work and who would control what papers go in. And so there's always the issue of, you know, how you manage it and will it work? And because the model doesn't have things like the color of the box, a lot of the newspapers, their perception is that the color of the box is the thing that people recognize. And so there's been some concern that if you don't have that color, people won't search out your publication. So it's in part to make sure that it works for the newspapers as well.
And so the amendment, go ahead, sorry.
Thank you. I'm very pleased to hear that Clean and Safe are going to be maintaining the boxes, and I am very impressed with how the Clean and Safe workers get tens of thousands of graffiti tags off every year. So this is a warning to taggers who might be thinking that they're going to be able to put their mark on these boxes. It'll be off within 24 hours, I'm confident. And so that's another reason for this pilot, I believe. Has there been consideration for people who are in wheelchairs or otherwise height challenged?
It's a great question. I haven't researched that personally. My expectation is that the vendors that are distributing the congregate box facilities nationwide have engineered them so that I think that the top handle on the maximum height of the box is 4 feet. So the top handle a publication would be somewhat under 4 feet. And I think for most folks, that'll be accessible.
And thank you. Yeah. I appreciate that consideration. So, because essentially it's a condo for for publications. Will there be rotation of which ones get to be on top and which ones?
Well, we had lots of discussion with the newspapers about whether they'd like to sort of rotate, and the upper left-hand corner is kind of perceived to be the ideal spot. And I think the consensus was that they'd rather be in the same place so that people learn that's where they go for that publication in the box.
Thank you very much, and I appreciate this. It has been a topic of discussion at our Sharing Public Sidewalks group discussions that we have regularly and that you have participated in. I very much appreciate that. Also want to commend Warren Jimenez, formerly the Mayor's Chief of Staff, who's been very diligent about looking through all of the potential freedom of speech issues and other considerations that I know you've been very diligent about also, so thank you.
Warren, that's by my count is the second or if not third time Warren has been celebrated today.
Yeah. I feeling cocky, aren't you?
Are we on a salary renewal clock coming up?
Commissioner Leonard, do you have any detailed questions about the newspaper boxes that you want to
have? They've been covered three times over, so.
Do you want to thank Warren Jimenez? Anything? Anything at all?
Warren's great.
He is great. Please. Well, I must say that I've been working on this issue since the first week I set foot in this building.
Wow.
I know. I was chief of staff. I'm really proud that Warren was the chief of staff that really brought this over the line, though, with the help of Rich and everyone, Christine and everyone in the Office of Bureau of Transportation. I moved the following amendment that went out on the July 10th memo that says no third-party speech will be allowed on the exterior of any of the co-located publication boxes. However, for each co-located publication box, the publication to whom the box is assigned may display the information of its choice, limited to one display of information of no more than 4 inches in height on each of the following sides, the front, side, and door of the co-located publication box.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded. Carla, would you please call the vote?
Saltzman?
Aye.
Leonard?
Aye.
Fritz?
Aye.
Fish?
Aye.
Adams?
Aye.
This is an emergency, right?
Yes.
All right. Would you?
Oh no.
Any testimony on this matter?
It is not an emergency. So.
It's not an emergency.
No. Yeah, we do have one person signed up though.
Okay.
Crystal Ilinski.
Thank you very much.
Thanks. She's not here, so council will consider this next week for a vote. We are adjourned.
Yeah, I'd love to see something like that.
I'm very impressed.